there's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, to all four corners of the globe, to every part of this little bluish-green planet that we call our Earth. Well, folks, the calls, the emails, the texts, the posts are flooding in from last week's conversation with our old friend Kurt South. It was so fever-pitched, so rife with nostalgia, indignation, and everything else, that he is back here this week, folks. The original co-pilot of the podcast and the guy that really got it all going and gave us all the laughs and perspective that hopefully I've been able to carry on all these years without him. Kurt South is here. South, it's great to see you again, man.
It's good to be back. Round two.
Enjoying your time here in Fort Worth and in Dallas and in Texas, I hope.
You didn't buy me lunch today.
That just hurts.
I'm sorry.
What I had to pay for in lunch today is going to – that's a couple of gigs, a couple of nights work just to pay off. Isn't that funny? You know, that is the strength and the weakness of our profession.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's so closely tied. I think it's healthy, ultimately. It's so closely tied to your life. I'm a singer-songwriter guy. You play these gigs, you get X amount of dollars, mm-hmm. and you got X amount of bills on the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, on a certain level, there's just a cash-in, cash-out mentality where you're just mm-hmm. like, man, you think in those terms.
Yep.
I long for the day when I've just got a pool of capital that I've accumulated or where it just, you know, the little expenses just flow in and out. I don't really notice it. And I'm focused on just gigantic stuff. Like, look, let's just take this gigantic mm-hmm. pile of cash, allot it here. You know, that kind of thing.
I'm working.
Tell me about it. Well, Kurt South is here, man. Last year, so we caught up with him. Just our preliminary podcast last week was catching up with our good friend. Life in Virginia, wife and kids, his retirement from music, his hat on the wall of the white elephant. Kurt is always good for current events, things going on in the world. He edited some interesting takes on some stuff on television recently. One was the big Beatles celebration on CBS with our old friend Paul McCartney and the podcast's own Ringo Starr.
Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, Rutherford. But no, we were talking about the Beatles and things and their place in the world and, kind of relating it to some of my perspective of the music business now as opposed to 20 years ago or something like that. You had some interesting observations mm-hmm. to that end because I was expressing to you, of course, everyone knows I'm the biggest Beatles fan who ever walked the earth, but I could not help but feeling a little... Just watching the Beatles thing and hearing so much about him here on the 50th anniversary of the Ed Sullivan Show,
mm-hmm.
a little bit like, okay, man, enough. I mean, I just remember watching Stopping Down when McCartney'd be on the Grammys and he'd play Let It Be or something. It's like, oh, my God. I mean, it was so rare. There wasn't YouTube maybe in the
right.
You know, in the 80s. It was rare. I mean, oh, my God, there's Paul playing a Beatles song. It was amazing. It was just and now CBS the other night, he's "Hey Jude," just Yoko Ono's dancing around in the crowd. I'm just like, oh God, not this again.
And I just made the observation. I go, you know what? The Beatles thing is just, there's nothing new, man. It's just,
you know what? People started growing their hair because we had long hair like the Beatles.
It's the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel great guilt watching that and feeling like I'm not enjoying it, or I'm not learning anything, or I'm not reveling in the I just felt funny about it. I mean, this is for me. I'm the biggest Beatle fan ever, and I just felt apathetic and a little beaten down by the whole thing.
I think being
why is that?
Well, being the Beatles fan that you are, I think your sensibilities ought to have you be more offended by it than anything else.
Adam Levine singing,
just somebody,
whatever he did. Yeah, I'm just like, oh god, they got this guy on. Oh no, yeah.
But
I don't want to be cynical and bitter. I mean,
no,
more people
that.
Like the Beatles than just me. So I'm like, hey, and everybody loves, you know.
But
whatever.
You got to remember what it's for. The purveyors of all that stuff are the same people that threw the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination on us.
That's right. That's
and
right.
Just beat us into submission with
yeah,
it. As
okay,
if
that's a good example.
I'm almost 38 years old. My whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I have been beaten upside the head by JFK.
The legacy of JFK.
So you have, forget, not even thinking of the political aspect.
The importance of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I blame the baby boomers.
Yeah.
Because that was a huge event for them, as was the Beatles hitting Ed Sullivan.
The kind of things you remember where you were when it happened. And so now those baby boomers are still 70 years old.
And they own everything.
They control the media. And so they're just repeatedly talking about the significance of the Beatles having long hair. I mean, we all know it. Sure. But
just repeating the same stuff. And then they're trying to keep it relevant by plugging in Katy Perry and Adam Levine and LL Cool J. And those people are they're half a step away from irrelevance themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And the Beatles music will live on.
Cheapening the Beatles legacy by just throwing Adam Levine at him. I mean, if I were Paul McCartney and I saw Adam Levine coming down the, I would just duck.
Ooh, crikey.
Yeah. Right. So
what's he doing now with the song? Well,
is it a girl with short hair?
Short hair. He's got the thing, the ink on the arms and the tattoos and all, yeah.
But anyway, there's like a, I don't know if my perspective changed. There was a performer who shall remain nameless on this show that I remember seeing when I was 20, and he was probably 35, and I was just in awe. Wow, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. And I was telling you, I saw him recently, and he was great, and he's very successful, but I was 40, and he was 55, and I'm looking at him up there, and I find myself thinking, I don't know if this is my trajectory anymore. Yeah.
Do you want it to
go that
long?
Of that, I don't know, man. It's just, you talked last week about, going to Virginia and doing other stuff and giving music a break. And, I'm not in that position, but part of me envies it in some way because it does become an obsession and a business thing and work and stuff. And you do enjoy it, but sometimes you wonder if it'd kind of be alluring to just say, man, just get a consistent paycheck and paint houses or something. Or I don't know, just do something else.
Something you said earlier – and now that you mentioned the consistent paycheck, you said the musician's life, you get X number of dollars for a gig and then you pay the bills, blah, blah, blah. One of my biggest adjustments when I went to non-musician life was getting a regular paycheck.
Yeah,
we're going to pay you every 2 weeks. And I'm like, well, can't you just give me $600 cash at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Isn't that how it works?
Right. adjusting to corporate life.
Yeah, and when I was in the music business, my wife and I had this little place in the kitchen where, I got paid in cash 80-90% of the time.
Yeah.
Where I just would keep a bunch of cash stuck.
Yeah.
In this little box in the kitchen, and if you need to go to the grocery store, pulled out a couple $100 and you go.
Yeah, right.
And then just all of a sudden, you're getting a paycheck every 2 weeks and trying to adjust to that. Mm-hmm.
It's a different kind of deal.
Totally different. You pay your bills differently that way.
I wouldn't know. Yeah, it's just like me.
But anyways, back to reasons why Adam Levine is irrelevant. Is that what we're talking about?
That's something.
Well,
I used to watch these older guys play music and think, man, if I could be 50 years old and people still swaying and singing my song, I'd be the greatest thing ever. And it would be, right? I mean, it would be, but I just – I just find it so. I think the Kennedy assassination is an apropos example of something that just, of course, it was a big event. No one's denying that, but just it's almost like over the years, the significance of it and the significance of the Beatles changed the world. We all accept that as truth. And look, I love their music, and there's no question they changed music and changed rock culture. There's no question about it. But how important is it? I mean, it's just all people talk about some of the time. Mm-hmm. And we just keep celebrating it and keep saying it and keep – but then you look at it, and it's just, look, man, they came in 1964, Ed Sullivan Show. 1964, February 1964. In 1966, okay, 2 years later, the Beatles played their very last live concert – at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. So you just – people forget – I think people and even myself, you just think of the Beatles, this massive – that they were just out there conquering the world for 20 years. You're like, dude, it was about 2 years. That's it. Mm-hmm. It was about the lifespan of Hannah Montana, dude, and the Jonas Brothers. Now, look, everyone – oh, come on, Phil. I'm like, I'm not saying their music was as good. I think a big part of it for me is my oldest three kids are girls. And so they followed. Dude, we rode the Jonas Brothers train. We rode the Hannah Montana train, the Justin Bieber train, the Katy Perry train, Lindsay Lohan or whatever comes along, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in the middle of One Direction thing. At their peak, this stuff's never going away. This is changing the world. There's never been a band like this guy ever. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, I laugh. I go, man, they'll all be in rehab in 2 years. Oh, Dad, you said it about all of them. I'm like, that's where they all are, you know, just like that. And, you know, but so part of me changes, you know, of course, the Beatles had sophisticated, wonderful, great music. But you remember in the crowd that the world was changing. And it shows the footage of the world changing. And it's 9-year-old girls screaming and wetting their pants at Shea Stadium. It's not a bunch of scientists and philosophers that those people became as adults that remember that event. It makes me ponder I don't know if it's the role of art in society or something.
Yeah.
You were saying some stuff. I mean,
we oversell the importance of
the
I'll tell you, when I look back at stuff musically that I just felt was life changing when I was 18 or 20,
right.
20 years later, I can turn that same stuff on and just go, I really can't tell you what I ever saw in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that doesn't mean it's...
Some of it's different. Some of it, though, still brings out the same...
Some of it still brings out the same stuff. But, you know, I think, especially when you're dealing with something as fleeting and as fickle as youth...
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, being young is the equivalent of being just extremely emotional and everything is in the moment.
And getting swept up in something that you bigger than yourself. That's what that world was.
Just like being in high school and feeling like, you know, high school is what the rest of life's going to be like. I will always not be the prettiest or not be popular or not be a jock, whatever.
Right.
And it's funny because I moved back to where I went to high school.
Mm-hmm.
20 years later,
yeah.
I live in pretty much in the end zone of the football field of my high school.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of my old teachers. Mm-hmm. I run into a lot of people that I went to high school with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy who is the coolest, best athlete, whatever, is now 5'8", 220 pounds with a gut, bald, and has a bad life. And it's funny because life at 17 is not life.
Yeah, yeah.
It just isn't. And I think we project a lot of that onto the music that we listen to. And it's not fair to the music.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not fair to us.
It's not. Those guys weren't writing music to be this stuff.
No.
So Dylan and those guys shake their heads and go, I don't know. I just made it up. What the hell? And so when we talk about it endlessly, and the baby boomers talk about it endlessly, and again, we all love it too. But that aside, it's almost you just see that, man, this is almost pure nostalgia.
That's all it is.
It's not change. It's not – I mean, the Berlin Wall coming down was change.
Right.
The Hiroshima bomb was change.
Apartheid
whether you
want to
admit it or not, you were affected by that. You were either – your life was either made safer or more dangerous by these events in a very real way. And I'm just not sure – But I don't know. Art, this gets into a weird didactic conversation about the role of art or whatever it means. It's just I get a little worn out about being beat over the head by baby boomer generation on what changed and how Woodstock changed the world. I'm like, what really changed? Everybody went out in the field and got high and had sex. It's been going on ever since. And before was that wasn't the first time it ever happened, you know.
Well, in
the Israelites were down at the foot of the mountain having Woodstock. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was just, I mean, it's just kind of like, I'm like, this is human life. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't remember it, or, but there's just, people have, we're always being reminded.
Well,
to look back and reflect.
The,
but,
the people who are the people who purvey this nostalgia.
There's
to
just
us.
A footnote at the bottom of the first page. Just, oh, yeah, 50 years ago today, Jonas Salk cured polio. Was that Salk? Right. Or, I'm like, now that's something.
That's something.
Why aren't we having a special on TV about that? But, oh, no, that's too boring. But John Lennon, all he wanted to do is make sure everyone had peace, you know? I'm just like, whatever, dude.
But the baby boomers are basically building monuments to themselves.
I
it's
think
all
that's
they're
right.
doing. And look, this
the Beatles
is
their culture, right?
Right. And keep in mind, you know, your parents and my parents are part of the baby boomer generation.
Sure.
So please, you know, moms and dads, don't take this the wrong way. But the baby boomers have put this country in a position in a lot of ways that is not good long term. It's you could say it's been a very self-absorbed generation.
You're turning this into a political show.
No,
yourself.
I'm just saying
are you trying to do?
The baby boomers are really, they think that what has happened during their lifetime is the most important set of whatever. Yeah. And
we keep talking about Vietnam. You know,
right.
We don't want to study
right.
the Civil War.
And I wouldn't try to even
World War II.
I wouldn't
it's
even try
all
to be
nom. It's all nom all the time.
I wasn't even trying to be political. I was just from the standpoint of the baby boomers seem to have always lived in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the point that their generation's consequences are going to echo for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've just kind of been worshiping themselves this whole time. And I'm not saying, you know, my parents certainly, none of this applies to them because they never talked to me about the Beatles or JFK or anything. They were never really into that. But, you know, that people of a certain age group, I think you can say, they run the world. And until they stop running the world, at least culturally and media-wise,
we're going to hear about how important
we're
going to
hear about
things were, and
but
are.
You know the misconception of what art is to us. That's part of one reason why I was relieved to get out of the music business because I found myself putting so much importance on stuff that didn't matter one bit. It was like pulling your hand out of a bucket of water when I left.
Yeah.
You never knew I was there. But I realized I used to spend all this time worrying about the significance of Neil Young and the impact on my songwriting. And you know what? What matters is, you know, are my kids healthy?
Sure.
And please stop telling me how great Neil Young is. Everyone in the world, just don't tell me that ever again. It's the same thing.
The fact that you're saying that in this studio is sacrilege. If Richard was here, and he would come in here and hit you over the head with his SG.
After the gold rush, great, but let's just get over it. It was great, but it is what it is. We passed it by a long time ago, and we're still driving.
Yeah. Well, man, what about speaking of other events on TV? Because you know it's hard to with so many options out there and people recording things and doing recording shows. There's not that center culture. The Ed Sullivan thing for certainly benefited.
Right.
The Beatles were one of three stations, and the Beatles, so everybody watched the Beatles. So nowadays there isn't TV shows and things that just everybody watches all the time that everybody catches on to. So it's rare when you have something like our Olympic Games that does draw a certain global audience where you feel connected. Well, have you watched it? I'm curious to hear if you've – I'll bet you have not seen one thing on the Olympics.
Nope.
Not one thing? Come on. What are you going to do now? What are we going to do in this segment? Sochi, man.
Well, I mean, I can tell
Putin, what's going on?
I've been to Russia.
When?
My dad has been a missionary to Russia for over 20 years. Russia
South,
and the Ukraine.
You've always got this leg. Well, I've spent substantial time in the Ukraine. Just wait a minute. What?
I went to the Ukraine the summer after my senior year of high school. My dad just got back from there recently.
Yeah.
But my dad he helped start a couple of churches over there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
yeah.
has gone there a couple times a year for more than half of my life. But all the stories you've been hearing about, you know, the terrorist threats, the hotels being just dumps, the construction being shoddy or not completed, the infrastructure being a disaster. It's Russia. That is their calling card.
Yeah, that's right.
Because however, the communism did not end just because we said so.
That's right.
They changed the name of what kind of government it was over there, but they didn't change the way they were doing business.
I mean, Putin
is a former KGB guy.
Yeah.
You think he's changed that much?
Yeah.
No, it is when I went over there, I got off the plane in Kiev, had to go to the bathroom.
Uh-oh.
I go to the bathroom.
As you often do.
Yes. I go to the bathroom. This is in 1994.
Was it a two-seater you sit back-to-back with some Cossack?
Not even that.
Yeah.
This was 1994, okay? I go to the bathroom. It is nothing but a room with a bunch of coffee can-sized holes in the floor.
No. In the airport?
In the airport, 1994.
Wow. Right next to the Starbucks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, look.
That's Russia.
Not that much has changed. Now, they have made many advances, obviously. My dad has told me it's gotten better in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But at its core, they still have many of the same problems that they had back when Gorbachev was running things. I mean, look at what's going on in the Ukraine right now, all the violence that they're going through. The fact that they're having the Olympics over there and they're having all these problems is no surprise. And not only did they have the holes in the floor, they had an old woman outside the bathroom door selling you toilet paper by the square.
No.
It was the only way you could get toilet paper. You had to buy it going in.
The red square.
On the front end. So I looked at her and just said, look, let's not do by the square thing. Here's $100. Give me all
Give me every roll you have.
I'm going in.
Russia.
But that's all I know about the Winter Olympics is that I couldn't care less.
What to my wandering eyes should appear? But J.W. Marshall,
Blue.
Walking in here. Blue, how's it going?
Yo,
what's going on, man? Let me move that mic a little closer to you. J.W. Marshall, there you go, perfect.
Yo. Sitting uncomfortably close.
Uncomfortably close to Kurt South, but sharing a microphone over there.
Can't say that I don't like it.
We were talking about some current events with Kurt South, sharing his thoughts on the Beatles tribute, Winter Olympics. Have you watched any Olympics, Blue?
Oh, yeah. Big Olympics fan.
Yeah, me too, man.
Opposite of South.
Really?
Opposite of South. Dude, what is it? It's the Winter Olympics. I know, but there's nothing else on TV
college
that draws.
Basketball?
Oh, come on. That's all right. That's, you know, these are the hopes and dreams of people, man, you know.
It's a bunch of snowboarding Shaun White types up there just gag me.
I like it, though, man. I don't know, it's compelling television for some reason. You've been watching it, Blue?
Oh, yeah.
Just a bunch of Johnny Weir figure skaters. I mean, come on. You guys would like that.
No men's figure skating for me. Only the women.
Stop it, Blue.
Only the women. That's right.
I was just over there in your seedy one-bedroom apartment. And I just saw
posters of Johnny Weir on the Johnny Weir poster.
And a Brian Boitano poster. And you were walking around in a tank top just looking at him.
Short, making it up, man.
Yeah, and I'm not judging. I'm glad that you enjoy their work.
Have you seen this? Bob Costas has the pink eye. Have you seen that?
No.
Yeah, he's on TV. He's got this, you know, nasty looking eye.
I did see that.
That's what happened to him getting off the plane. You had coffee can toilets, man. He just got some infection, just something floating in the air got him. You know, as he landed.
Ugh.
I hear Russia's super, maybe not in Sochi, but like Moscow. It's one of the most expensive places on earth nowadays.
I've heard that.
Oh, you buy a Coke at McDonald's, just like that'd be $33. Just American, like, what? Like $33. I mean, just like everyone goes, man, you can't believe how expensive it is.
You want to hear?
Why is that? I'm not an economist. Is it just a few oil guys own everything? Is that what happens?
There's a very few extremely wealthy people all live within
the oligarchy.
Yeah, it is.
Putin and his buddies. Yeah.
You want to hear a funny story? Yeah. My time over there, we went to this public beach that was on a river there.
Uh huh.
And I had my dad knew some people who were about my age, and I was hanging out with them. And they said, well, let's go to the beach down here. Well, I don't have a bathing suit.
Right.
Oh, we'll get you one. Uh-oh. All they wear there are Speedos.
Yeah, so you had to go.
I wound up with an American flag Speedo.
That would get you shot by the KGB.
Oh no, because
and it shot just, by other people as well.
At this, you know, at this point, they were like really pro-America.
We were the new thing.
Yeah, we were the new thing, and so I was wearing an American flag Speedo,
representing over there,
cavorting
in the sand. Wow. Just,
You've seen the picture, Blue. I don't want to see that. I sent it to you years ago.
What have you been up to, Blue, besides watching the Olympics? You traveling? Blue is a consultant for hire. Consultant for hire as well. Traveling very much. Does consulting for online educational products and software. Is that an accurate description?
That's an accurate description. That's as much as I can divulge at this point.
And let me tell you what, man. Just like Putin's got his buddies out there who funnel each other money, I've got Blue out there funneling me gigs all the time.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, yeah. There's some of these software guys have like, man, we need some guy to read a biography on Abe Lincoln for a voiceover for a thing. So that's what I'm proud to say. I've done some educational. So some of our listeners' children are going to be in school and just Abraham Lincoln came from humble beginnings. See what I did right there? I turned on the sonorous storytelling voice. Yeah, it's just one of my abilities.
Can you read it and sound like Morgan Freeman? Because he's the ultimate narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
Get him and James Earl Jones. Sir.
Yeah.
It's everywhere you want to be. Or something. I love it, dude. The voiceover thing is it's a strange deal, a strange talent. But I've done all these educational things for. I need to send you some, Kurt. I've got some MP3s.
That'd be good listening.
And a lot of it's like current event kid stuff. Mm-hmm. Trying to be multicultural, trying to be hip to the problems of the modern day youth. You know, just Juan's friend. Juan's friend Angelina is joining a gang. Is this a good idea? Check yes. Or no.
Depends on who she's affiliating with, buddy.
Soon Lee sees her friend Marco steal some gum in the grocery store to get into a gang. You know, what should Soon Lee do? Nothing.
Tie on the colors and rumble.
Call the police. Tell his family. You know, like a multiple choice things, but... Oh, it's hilarious, dude! It's the kind of thing. When these jobs start, there's so much to do. I mean, you think, oh man, I just worked on it for 5 or 6 hours. Well, man, you're sitting there reading and talking like that for 5 or 6 hours. You start to go insane, and you start
to see how you do it,
and you start laughing, and you start seeing things weird. It's bizarre. It is like a mental torture. You start to freak out a little bit.
Did you
see that band Skinny Puppy, the Canadian band, had sent a bill, like an ASCAP bill, to Gitmo because that's what they were playing to torture all the guys in Gitmo.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I just saw a little blurb. I just said that it came out that during the interrogations or something at Gitmo, they were blasting ear-splitting crazy music to make these guys, days on end to get these guys, and that it was by the band Skinny Puppy, who is, I think, just a kind of a screamo alternative thing.
Industrial rock.
Yes. I mean, how would you feel if someone said, Kurt, we owe you some money, Kurt, because mm-hmm. we have used your music, your recorded music, your heart and soul, as a means of inflicting ungodly torture on our fellow man?
I would say, you don't owe me a dime.
Your patriotic duty to provide that service. Your patriotic duty.
Oh, y'all are listening to my stuff? Yeah. You're enjoying it? I wouldn't say that exactly. We were playing your music. We thought, what is the most awful and most torturous, sonic thing we can possibly put out there just to make a man surrender all of his virtues, all of his beliefs, to give us everything? Just your music, Phil or Kurt. And
play a recording of a recent Bob Dylan show. No,
the guys at Gitmo are just on the floor, just like, kid, this doesn't even sound like Blood on the Tracks. What's he doing? He's playing piano during Tangled Up in Blue. You've got to be kidding me. You think that would work? Skinny Puppy is probably more effective in that area.
The way we got Bin Laden is we played Boulevard ad nauseum.
Kurt South classic, yeah.
Finally,
yeah.
Fallujah broke and just told us he's in the White House back there.
Just Bin Laden's been playing this Kurt South album over. Just my God, look, send in the helicopters. Here we are. I'll do anything.
Look, he gets Papa John's every day at 4:30. So just wait till the pizza guy pulls up on the Papa John's.
Send in a guy. I wonder what that royalty check looks like, Gitmo. I mean, if you're Gitmo, do you pay the bill or do you just not pay the bill?
No, you don't pay the bill.
You don't think so?
No.
Now, international incident, man.
There's no rules there.
Yeah, huh? There's no rules there's that no, apply yeah. to that.
I think that's just an international...
No rules apply. Sorry, Skinny Puppy.
Yeah, Skinny Puppy's not getting their money.
Normally, I'd be on your side, but there's no way...
You're always on the side of the artist. Or are you, Kurt South? Never?
Am I?
I don't know. I don't know anymore. You're kind of a corporatist now.
I am kind of a corporatist.
Yeah? Yeah.
You know...
You assimilating to a blue-collar life?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a white collar life. Blood life.
Well, I have a blue collar existence. It's a blue collar business I'm in. But you know, when you realize what it takes to just keep a company running.
Yeah.
And the responsibility that is on someone's shoulders to keep that thing going and make sure everybody gets paid and all that. You know, you have an entirely different view of the man when.
Yeah.
When you are the man.
When you are the man. That's right.
You do. You have and you realize that, you know, like, I don't own the company that I'm with now, but I'm one of three people who makes all the decisions for it.
Right.
And when I my boss is a great guy, and he wants the best for everybody. Mm-hmm. He wants to take care of everyone's family. And you see what kind of painstaking hours he puts in just to make sure everybody else gets taken care of.
Yeah,
you have a totally different view of it.
How many employees do y'all have?
Season, we'll have about 16 employees.
Yeah.
Off season, we keep about 11.
You'll have any functions, parties you need a band for in May? Because the full band may be out your direction, possibly. Have you heard about this, Blue?
I have not.
I haven't heard about
it. Breaking news.
Is there a breaking news sounder we need to play?
No. There is a small event.
Will you tell that cat to stay over
there? Of course, we will announce it on the podcast if it comes to fruition. But in that area, in North Carolina, there might be an event in mid to late May that brings the band to North Carolina. We might be interested. Might be able to cut you a real good deal.
So
maybe you could pay us in a sheep manure or something like that. Send us back with a couple of bags of peat moss.
Yeah,
what's the value of something like that?
We could send you. I mean, since we operate a tree farm, we could
uproot a couple of.
We could go dig a couple of really nice river birch specimens for you, or a nice Leland cypress. Or somebody.
And unlike money that's just going to be gone Monday morning, this tree will grow and provide shade and nutrition and oxygen for forever.
We have some of the nicest Natchez crepe myrtles east of Mississippi. So.
Any fruit trees?
No.
No?
Nope. No fruit trees. All ornamental.
Ornamental.
All ornamental.
Yeah. Estate.
Can we strap them to the top of the van or the RV?
Or the RV on the way back.
You know.
Does it have to bag around the roots kind of deal? How do you transport a tree?
Bald?
Yeah.
Bald, burlapped.
What does that mean, bald?
Well, the root ball will be covered in burlap with a wire cage around
it. Yeah.
In a ball, yeah.
Do you soak it in water? Do you keep it? Is it moist or something?
Yeah, we'll keep it moist. And once it's on the truck, it's up to you. But
yeah.
But everywhere. I've got some really nice cryptomeria that.
I can hear our musician friends just toning out. There's people just clicking off of the podcast right now as we talked about it.
Hey, I'll tell you what you can do. We've got a.
I love it.
We've got a killer bass pond.
Oh yeah,
right out in front of the office. Mm. Come out there, wet a line, catch an 8-pounder like it's nothing.
Oh, is that right? Really? That big?
We don't mess around with fishing up there. I tell you what, the fishing up there, just you can't spit without hitting a trophy bass. So.
Love it, dude. Love it.
Yeah.
We need to make it up there for a jam fishing trip. And just get it all. Come back with some trees instead of payment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We are much more likely to give you trees than money.
What does a nice crepe myrtle go for these days?
Oh, you know, the bigger, the more expensive they are, obviously. So you get a nice one that looks, you know, 10, 12 feet tall. You're looking at $250 probably.
Yeah. It's going to take a lot of trees to get us out there, man. A lot.
A lot of trees. Where in North Carolina are you playing?
I don't know. This is top secret information. This is a teaser. This is something I'm not even legally obligated.
This doesn't have anything to do with a mutual friend of ours that we've known in a...
No.
Okay.
No. I know to whom you're alluding. That's you, Jeff King. He knows where he is. But
King. Love you, buddy.
King's
call me.
You know, we'll probably stop by King's. He's in Knoxville.
Yeah, that's what you told
me. Jeff King, who has hired us out there, his place in North Carolina, several times. And I went out and played Elizabeth's birthday party last year solo. Mm-hmm. Sat in with the Notorious Gringos reunion, who have the Gringos who have recorded here at the studio several years ago. Well, I came home early. You know, remember that
yeah,
song?
Yeah.
With my new shotgun.
I remember Doug.
Yeah.
About to go brown, boys. Doug.
Doug
it's
going
noon.
Brown at like noon. Yeah. Just putting down the beer, electing some Jack Daniels. That was the only time. You know how they tell you to loosen strings when you get on an airplane on a guitar? Loosen the strings. I'm always like some formality or something. Doug, at that session, man, he gets off the plane. He's got a Gibson hollow body to 335. Opens the case, dude, and that headstock is just snapped off. It's just standing straight up. Those strings, there's tension on the neck. Get the high altitude, there's just too much tension. There's no air pressure around it.
Oof.
So there's no messing around, man. I mean, I always loosen the strings of my guitar if I travel with it. Just thinking like, eh. I think if you're in the cabin, if it's in the overhead bin, you're fine. It's a pressurized cabin.
If you check it.
If you check it, man, yeah. So you know, musicians beware out there, dude, because I saw a beautiful guitar snapped in half, and that headstock snapped right off of there. I think he got it repaired and everything was fine, but dude, that's serious.
Bad.
I couldn't believe it. I felt so bad. I was like, man. He said, man, I've always heard loosen the strings. He said, but I never really took it seriously. I was like, dang, man.
So you're going to be in North Carolina.
Maybe. I don't know.
Man, the bass will be biting
working
by then.
Yeah, get up there.
You bringing Blue?
Yeah, of course, man. We're all going. We got the RV now.
Who's the drummer now?
Yeah, Cody Frank, the great Cody Frank. Been with us about a year.
2 years.
2 years. Has it been 2 years? Something like that. And JW's brother Richard plays keyboards and works with Cody at the same company, doing construction, all kinds of stuff like that. So they work together, and God, we all just work together, play together.
This is the first time I've never been intimately familiar with every member of the full band.
I know it, yeah.
It's a little unsettling.
You've been gone, what, three years? 3.5?
No, it's been a long time. I just remember, I mean, I think Stu and I were born in the same bathroom.
I know.
He and I were so...
Our old drummer, Stu Wiley. Stu. Hello, Stuart. I was heartbroken, man. Stu, you know, he had a similar experience to what you had, Kurt, where he just said, man, I got to just get out of this thing. I've got a wife now. I got a child. I got a job. And just couldn't go out of town and do the... And he subbed a couple gigs for us, didn't he, Blue?
Early on.
We couldn't get a... Say, man, come out and do this one at the Elephant or something. And there was finally a moment about 2 or 3 years ago where someone couldn't, you know, Luke Ayers couldn't make it. So I said, well, I'll just get Stu to do it. And I kind of think it was an afterthought, right? I texted, hey, man, Stu, come out. We need you Saturday. I just can't do it, man. I was like, what do you mean you can't do it? You know, he just goes... He just flatly just said, and I respect this, he just goes, just not up for it. Just not up for it. And I just thought... The king is dead. We finally have lost him. He doesn't want to play the gig. I know he still listens to the podcast. We all stay in touch with him, but I respect him for that. It's hard once you get settled into that family life just to go, man, I got to go get all my drums, get all my shit, get down there, load in. But Phil, I love you, but I'm not just not up for it. Up for it.
You know, since I've had my self-imposed exile, I've had a few opportunities.
Yeah,
come up, and I've just flatly refused.
Rest assured, if we get out there that way, we will have a reunion. I still play all the time in the world. In fact, I play so many gigs solo and with the band. We're playing like 3 or 4 hours. I'm going so deep into the catalog.
Slumming it for songs.
All the time in the world. Or, I mean, like the Woodshed, I play it, you know, or the Elephant, you know, it is a Kurt South song.
Wherever you
rarely
are.
Rarely does anyone say anything. Some guy standing up. Oh, man.
Someday people will think Kurt South and Gary Floater are just
the same guy. I thought that was that guy that didn't exist.
Is he real?
No, that's Gary Floater. No, I thought Kurt South was the guy that...
Just a legend.
Y'all made it up. He moved to Virginia or something. No, that was a real guy.
He's the guy that Jason Eady made up with Owen Temple.
thinking of Gary Floater. That's that whole different thing.
I thought Owen Temple was the made-up guy.
Well, that's why we have the podcast, the P2 podcast, to set the record straight, folks.
By the way, does Owen Temple, you have him on the podcast.
He's been on. It's been a few years, but yeah, he came on.
Shout out to the great Owen Temple.
The great
Temple,
Owen
man.
Temple, man. Always
great
out there.
Guy.
Every time I hear one of his songs, he's just doing great.
He's an awesome songwriter.
Max Stalling was here a couple weeks ago.
Another one of my favorites.
And said, me and Max and Owen did a bunch of shows early on and said he had seen Owen and... doing his deal.
Those are good guys. Support those guys out there. They're two of the best.
Two of the nicest guys. Well, folks, that's all the time we have on the podcast. The great Kurt South coming by yet again, man. The original wingman of the podcast, the guy that brought all the laughs. In fact, man, I've been thinking about, we've gotten back to doing real consistent podcasts like we did for so many years. Mm-hmm. But we never would get some gaps, like a week or a month or 2 months where I just don't have anything new. I'm like, God, I need to get back on the podcast. And it seems like I get on these runs where I get a whole bunch of them lined up and then it sags. But during these, we have so many, you know, p2podcast.com, you can go through there and every single podcast is there just to be streamed. You can just click and it just plays. So I'm just on Facebook and stuff, every time I post a new one, you can see people listen to it and the downloads and stuff. But I'm going to start a small, subtle, and unassuming archive presentation. Because there's so much great stuff that someone's coming to the podcast late would never know or have any interest in.
Some
but you might,
radio
you might you might just say, hey,
best of the podcast.
Yeah, just kind of you know, just a posting on Facebook or Twitter. Just I'm gonna revisit episode 17, Philip Richard and Kurt South about 4 years ago, talking about a particularly disastrous gig in Nacogdoches. Tune in. Yeah, like I think people would appreciate it. A couple people might click on there who wouldn't have just gone back to the website, you know, but something, because every now and then I'll go back there and I'll say, which one was this? And I'll click on it. And it'll be me and Owen or Mac or you or
– oh, yeah.
You know, there's great stuff back there. And occasionally you kind of have to dredge it up just to let people know that, you know, we've been here for a long time. And
just
know,
a teaser, my ankle still hurts. Yeah. Go listen to the Nacogdoches.
The Nacogdoches where he falls off the stage holding the amp. And it's Kurt. I looked up to see Kurt falling off the stage in slow motion. You go, just floating back to the earth. I'm like, yes, floating back to the earth. The podcast, folks, Phil at philpritchett.com. Email us and let us know what we're doing right or wrong. Of course, book the band. Book Phil Pritchett and the full band, or book The British Are Coming, man, the hottest, most insane and ridiculous British tribute band that's out there. We do our monthly residency at the Mansion and elsewhere. It's fantastic. In fact, we've done some shows and are going to be doing some festivals where we do one set as Phil Pritchett and the full band and another set as the Beatles, British and Invasion band. The British Are Coming. So many ways to have us come entertain you now. Or, of course, come here to the new studio in Uptown. You're the second podcast we've had, Kurt, here in the new building. What do you think
this
of the new
nice.
Building?
This is nice. I could get used to this.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Uptown, right here by very the S&D Oyster Bar, the 1958 Gibson acoustic over there.
We have this cat here. What's the cat's
cat?
Name? Fred?
Yeah, Fred, yeah.
Fred lives here. I don't know cat named Fred.
I don't a feel female. Like is Fred it a female? Respects me.
Oh, yeah. Invades your space. Our thanks also to J.W. Marshall, Blue, our bass player of the full band. Dropping by unexpectedly, man. What a treat that always is when that happens.
What a treat you are, Blue.
That is, man. Coming here and sit down and say hello
to
Kurt. Well, that is all the time we have for the podcast this week, folks. We will be back with much more observations and lessons of life and music to come. We hope you'll be listening next week. We'll see you then, folks. Much tougher.